Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to tonight's version of the Molloy program. Still have the hideous allergy cough, so no video streaming tonight. We'll have a backup on Monday. I could turn it on, but I just feel like hammered hell, and my nose is running, and you know. So, how about the governor of Arizona, huh? How about that Jan Brewer? Now, I'm not sure. I'm not real sure here, but I would be willing to bet you, if asked, Jan Brewer would say she's a Christian. You think? Eh? Well, she might be Jewish. But either Christian or Jew, she's kind of stuck now. She has violated God's commandments in signing this hideous immigration, quote, bill. I read from the book, Leviticus 19, 33 and 34. And if a stranger sojourn with thee in your land, ye shall not vex him. But the stranger that dwelleth with you shall be unto you as one born among you. And thou shalt love him as thyself. For ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. Now that's directly out of the mouth of the Christian God. I mean, right out of his larynx. And to make sure you know that, you see, he ends it by saying, I am the Lord your God. Exodus 22:21. Thou shalt neither vex the stranger nor oppress him. Exodus 23:9. Also, thou shalt not oppress a stranger, for ye know the heart of a stranger, seeing ye were strangers. Deuteronomy 10:19. Love ye therefore the stranger, for ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. So in four or five different places in the Old Testament where God is speaking directly to the Israelites, and the Christians have co-opted everything that God said to the Israelites and said, this is inerrant. This is the word of God. This cannot be tampered with. Nah, do not change a comma, period, or semicolon. This is the Lord your God speaking. Well, Jan, Mrs. Governor, guess what? Your ass and the rest of you is in a heap of trouble tonight. I'm here to tell you. You have, God repeated this four, five, six times just to make sure that the point was made. Do not vex a stranger. Treat him as if he were native born. Treat him as if he were one of yours. And what are you crazy bastards in Arizona doing? What is wrong with you? Ah! The bill that this God-hating Governor Jan Brewer signed. Wouldn't it be funny if she were an atheist? Then I'd be celebrating her. I'd say, hey, go, Jan. Forget what the Bible says, the B-I-B-L-E. It's all head cheese to me. The bill that Governor Brewer signed makes it a misdemeanor to lack proper paperwork in Arizona. Oh, my goodness. Proper paperwork. Last time I was in Phoenix, I think I had a driver's license. Is that proper? But you can get a driver's license in the bottom of a Cracker Jack box now. If you don't have proper paperwork and you are stopped and asked, I want to see your papers, and you don't have proper, what is proper paperwork? That's a misdemeanor. The law also requires police officers to attempt to determine a person's immigration status if the cop forms what the law calls a reasonable suspicion that someone is undocumented. Now, what would be a reasonable suspicion? I, a white male of a certain age, will never be stopped in Phoenix. And trust me, my age has nothing to do with it. It's the white skin. I will never be stopped. I could be from, I don't know, pick a country, Ukraine, Poland, any country, here with no papers, illegal, looking for a job in Phoenix or some other hellhole in Arizona, looking to find, I don't know, I want to cut your lawn. Wait, they don't have lawns out there. All right, I want to move your stones around. Careful there. I want to trim your cacti. Whatever it is that, you know, yard boys do out there, I want to do it. Well, I could be standing in front of a Walmart with a lawnmower and a pair of hedge clippers, and the police would never come up to me because I, thank you, Jesus, am white. But let's supposing Jose Enrique Gonzalez y Santa Maria is standing in front of Walmart with or Home Depot with lawnmower and pair of hedge trimmers. How long do you think it's going to take under this new law for some bully-ass white cop to pull up and say, yo, Beaner, come here, show me your papers. Now, is that racial profiling? Meantime, I'm standing right there too, but he's not going to call me a Beaner. He might call me a Dago or a WAP. Maybe not, because I don't look that Italian. But he's not going to ask for my papers. And why is that? Well, I don't have dark hair or olive skin or dark, well, kind of olive skin or dark eyes. I've got blue eyes. So he's not going to ask me anything. Is that racial profiling? Is that against the law? The Constitution declares that only the federal government has the power and the authority to make laws regarding immigrations. Or immigration only, whether it's illegal or illegal, doesn't make any difference, only. So obviously this is not going to stand up. What it will do, what this bill will be challenged in court and will be thrown out. It'll be appealed to go to appeals court. It'll be thrown out. It'll be appealed to go to the Supreme Court. And even these right-wing bastards on the U.S. Supreme Court will have to throw it out. The problem is this is going to take some time. And in that time period, there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be severely harassed, and there's going to be blood. There will be blood. Over this, there will be blood. You know it as well as I do. I'm not sure whose blood will flow, but there will be blood. The extreme right wing crazy people, white crazy people in Arizona, you know, the Glenn Beck listeners will see this as a license for them to go burn the homes of people that they think are illegal immigrants. Go burn their trailers or their apartments or their condos or their houses. This is all it takes. The laws that were passed in Germany, in Hitlerian Germany, about the Jews, unleashed a kind of bigotry that had been pent up that resulted in 6 million dead. What's going to happen in Arizona? Are you people in Arizona going to stand for this? Of course you are. Of course you are. It's not your problem. Leading police chiefs and sheriffs have expressed outrage at the bill's signing, say it will cause immigrants to avoid reporting crimes. It'll divert officers' attention from going after violent offenders. Oh, but the conservative teabag freaks that pass this, they don't care. And this is the same state, isn't it, that has before it a bill to demand, or has that been passed into law too, demand to see a birth certificate? For any presidential candidate, you know, we have a freak down here in Georgia who's introduced the same thing into the Georgia General Assembly. Huh? Yeah. Astonishing. Astonishing. All you have to do is look like a Mexican. Now, that could be a Guatemalan, Honduran, Salvadoran, Costa Rican, Nicaraguan, Panamanian, Chilean, Bolivian. You see, the white people in Arizona and across the rest of the country, they can't tell the difference. You know, they all look the same.
Thank you. is the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. A couple of emails on this. According to Kate, it's also ironic that Jan Brewer isn't even the elected governor. She stepped up from the Secretary of State's office when Napolitano went to Homeland Security. This is truly most scary, Kate writes. Oh, by the way, there are green lawns in Phoenix. They're called golf courses. Yeah. From RD, Mike, what are the Native Americans in Arizona thinking about this insanity? Yeah, you know, I mean, if you are an indigenous person, if your family goes back, you know, 2,000 years in what is now called Arizona, and here all these Europeans have moved in, and now they've declared that Latinos or Hispanics or, I don't know, whatever you want to, however you want to identify them, they're no longer welcome. And I know I'm going to get emails from people that say, that's not what the issue is, Mike. The issue is illegal. Illegal. Aliens. Uh-huh. Well, the Bible says it doesn't make a distinction between legal and illegal. I mean, what? Oh, well, I guess I just don't understand the problem in Arizona, do I? Peter in Vermont. Mike, apparently the Cactus League, baseball, is quite popular in Arizona. Also, a lot of Major League Baseball teams have spring training facilities there. How many millionaire athletes who may or may not resemble the dreaded illegal alien want to get pulled over and hassled by the police? Might have an economic impact there. Peter in Vermont. Yeah, what, isn't that going to be funny? Be spring training and some Latino ball player? You know there's going to be trouble. Spilk writes in that Jan Brewer is a Lutheran. And the dog whistle that she just blew to the crazy Minutemen is going to result in the injury and death of a lot of Latinos. The Archbishop of Los Angeles, for what it's worth, you know, credit where credit's due, after all. According to L.A. Times and Irish Central and a couple other places here, Spilk has sent me. The Archbishop of Los Angeles, Cardinal Roger Mahoney, has come out swinging against Arizona's illegal immigration measure, calling it something the Nazis would have been proud of. He blasted the bill as, quote, the country's most retrogressive, mean-spirited, and useless anti-immigration law. He went on to say, quote, American people are fair-minded and respectful. I can't imagine Arizonans now reverting to German Nazi and Russian communist techniques, whereby people are required to turn one another into the authorities on any suspicion of documentation, end quote. I don't get this. I really don't, except to consider in the greater context of the illness, the sickness that is destroying the United States of America. And it is a sickness. It's manifesting in several different ways. This is just one manifestation of this critical and possibly fatal illness that is eating this country alive. Just eating us alive. So here's another symptom, right? Governor Jan Brewer. And I think the guy who sponsored the bill, somebody was, some legislator from Arizona said, this is not racial profiling. You can tell who these people are by their shoes. Because illegal immigrants apparently wear a certain coded shoe. Is that right? I didn't know that. We have an awful lot of non-white people, African-American people live in the metro Atlanta area, all over North Georgia. And I haven't noticed their shoes. I know a lot of these people, when they first show up here, have shoes that are falling apart, have holes in them, and after not too many weeks from mowing lawns and putting roofs on and digging ditches and doing the kind of work that white people don't want to do here, they have a brand new pair of sneakers or even regular shoes. It's amazing. They get shoes. And I'm trying to figure out, what is an illegal immigrant shoe? Son of a gun. We have a mall not far from here that is all in Spanish, and it's got all these little shops in it, and it's designed for the Latino population in a certain part of Atlanta. And I'm going to have to go over there tomorrow. I'm going to walk in one of those stores and say, show me some of them Mexican or immigrant shoes. I want to see some illegal immigrant shoes, because the guy out there in Arizona says, well, that's how you tell who they are. You look at their shoes. Oh, okay. Well, that's easy.
When you're strange, faces come out of the rain. When you're strange, no one remembers your name. When you're strange, when you're strange.
C-SPAN, so you don't have to. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. BC writes, I have family in Arizona, but I'll be damned if I'd travel with my little Chiquita into that hellhole. There would be a major confrontation. We're talking blood on the highway. Now they're really starting to head home. Yeah. Jared in Bakersfield, California writes, Mike, these anti-immigration laws such as those just passed in Arizona are just the beginning of the states' rights racist sentiment currently rippling across the country. Didn't we already go through this in the 1860s? What if the higher courts don't strike down the Arizona law? This is all because of a black man is in charge, Jared. They have no choice if they are strict constitutionalists, because the whole idea of immigration and who controls the terms of immigration is a federal issue. This is probably just to get people elected in Arizona, but it's going to get people killed too. You know it as well as I do. God, I hate this. Last night, I read the first part of a piece that Bob Alexander, our Moment with Bob person, sent to me. And it was about his experience in quitting smoking. And I said, anyone who is a smoker, in my entire life's experience I've ever met, I'm talking about an adult, 14 and 15 and 16, 17-year-olds who start smoking, don't consider quitting, because according to them, they can quit at any time. And besides, they're immortal. They'll never get a disease. And if they do get a disease, they'll take a pill and it will go away. But I'm talking about rational adults, not that teenagers are irrational. You know what I'm saying? Rational adults who are smokers. I've never met one who didn't want to quit, but who had tried many times. Or the favorite line that I used to use all the time. Yeah, I know, it's going to kill me. I'm going to quit soon. Or, I'm in the process of quitting. Or, yeah, I've got to quit. You're right, absolutely right. Yeah, I know. So it's amazing what a powerful addiction can do to you. And I don't think there's anything more powerful in terms of addiction than nicotine. Here's part two. Hey, Mike, a quick recap. Quitting smoking was the hardest thing I've ever consistently failed at until I discovered e-cigarettes. The transition from smoking to using an e-cig was effortless. From a health point of view, the benefits of switching are essentially the same as quitting. And I think that's remarkable. To be able to reap the rewards without having to endure the insanity that goes along with quitting is a couple of notches past astounding and just shy of miraculous. So where can a wannabe ex-smoker buy one? You can find overpriced e-cigs at kiosks in mega malls or at your local smoke shop. In the real world, you can easily spend 2 to 3 times what you would on the internets. Beware of scams, where the company gives you a free e-cig, but automatically whacks your credit card $70 a month forever. After clicking around in the Google, I happened upon some great unsolicited reviews of SigEasy.com, where the starter kit with shipping comes to $45.90. The other company I've done business with is Vapor4Life.com. They carry the same models of e-cig and a slightly wider variety of e-liquid flavors and various nicotine strengths. Both companies provide great customer service, quick delivery, and the American Lung Association, anti-smoking groups, some state governments, and the FDA all want to shut them down. Here's where it gets interesting. Some anti-smoking people have a strange, puritanical, Calvinistic, anti-smoker attitude that I find just plain weird. The criticism I've received since taking up the e-cig from some of these people doesn't make sense. When I tried the nicotine gum and the patch, there was cheerleading, but using the e-cig brought disapproval. You know why? I'm not suffering. Because I was stupid enough to take up such a vile, loathsome habit, quitting shouldn't be easy. There ought to be punishment involved. That'll teach me. Some groups say the e-cig should be banned because of the stress and confusion caused when the poor, innocent public thinks someone might be smoking. Well, somebody quick call a ambulance for these people so they can be sedated before they find out that SpongeBob SquarePants isn't a real person. The name of the game here is harm reduction. My objective wasn't to achieve an absolutely pure lifestyle. I wasn't trying to get into heaven. I just wanted to quit smoking. Sure, I'm still breathing in nicotine vapor, but I'm not inhaling or exhaling tar-filled smoke consisting of over 4,000 chemical compounds, at least 69 of which are known to cause cancer. Nicotine without the smoke can still raise your blood pressure, about the same as a cup of coffee, big deal. A spokesman for the American Lung Association has declared that electronic cigarettes are designed as a ploy to encourage people to smoke regular cigarettes. That's insane. You shouldn't have to rebut that kind of lunacy, but it has to be done. That's just a sample of misinformation put out about e-cigs. Another goofy argument is the different e-liquid flavors will entice children to get hooked on e-cigs. That's right. Kids will see the chocolate mint flavor on a website somewhere, sneak out dad's credit card, and order an e-cig. I'm sure that happens all the time in the alternate universe where kids somehow haven't figured out it's easier to steal cigarettes from their parents. Since 2008, the FDA has been trying to prevent e-cigs from entering the country. Shipments have been seized, and e-cig vendors have gone out of business. In 2009, the FDA warned that e-cigs were harmful. Their analysis of the made-in-China products found carcinogens and toxic chemicals. Well, that sounds scary, doesn't it? The FDA condemned e-cigs on the basis that their lab detected carcinogens, tobacco-specific nitrosamines, in the cartridges of e-cig manufacturers. The FDA held a press conference in which it attempted to scare electronic cigarette users into discontinuing e-cigarette use. Anti-smoking groups, including the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids and American Lung Association, called for a ban on e-cigs due to this carcinogen scare. Like a friend of mine says, quote, though I was born at night, it wasn't last night. I think it's wise to be somewhat skeptical of the government agency that accepted fudged and falsified data and gave us all Nutrasweet. Just Google the side effects of aspartame sometime when you're looking for late-night scary ghost story reading. The FDA and the anti-smoking groups failed to mention that when extracting nicotine from tobacco, some tobacco-specific nitrosamines come along for the ride. The level of these nitrosamines present in electronic cigarettes is at the trace level, measured in parts per trillion, and are comparable to the levels found in the nicotine gum and patch, which are FDA approved. I wonder why the FDA would lie by omission by leaving that out. Maybe it has something to do with money? 10 years ago, the combined sales of the nicotine patch and gum was $570 million. I haven't been able to determine currently how much drug maker GlaxoSmithKline makes from Nicorette, but they're spending $30 million this year on advertising their gum. Big Tobacco rakes in $300 billion a year in sales. There are approximately 47 million smokers in the U.S. who buy 30 billion packs of cigarettes each year. Obviously, e-cigs have the potential to carve out big slices from the big tobacco and pharma profit pie. But who are the interested parties who could potentially have their income streams reduced if e-cigs really took off? In my state, Washington, a smoker pays a $3 sin tax on a pack of cigarettes. This cigarette tax varies from state to state, but the loss of that kind of revenue during these economic hard times might be the motivating factor to pass legislation banning the sale of e-cigs. Four states are currently working to pass such a ban. I thought I had come to the end of the follow the money road until I read a quote from an R.J. Reynolds spokesman buried in a BBC News article regarding the economics of tobacco. Quote, "The U.S. government makes seven times more money from the sale of a pack of cigarettes than the cigarette maker does." End quote. Previously, I thought that outside corporate pressure was behind the FDA's misinformation campaign to ban e-cigs. With $300 billion a year behind you, you can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel with your bare hands, or make the FDA jump through hoops like a circus dog. But the government is also a player with billions at stake. It's equally valid to conjecture that maybe this time internal pressure is at work. Or maybe it's like the ending of Agatha Christie's Murder on the Orient Express. All the suspects did it. I don't know when I got my e-cig in the mail, or I didn't know when I got my e-cig in the mail, that I'd end up following a story like pulling the thread on a cheap sweater. I was just happy to get off cigarettes. Now I know there are hundreds of billions of dollars in play, and the odds aren't in the smoker's favor. Finale when we come back. Stay with us.
Show. Talk radio matters here.
It is 10 before the hour. Back to the finale here of Bob's Cigarettus Opus. I didn't know when I got my e-cig in the mail that I'd end up following a story like pulling the thread on a cheap sweater. I was just happy to get off cigarettes. Now I know there are hundreds of billions of dollars in play, and the odds aren't in the smoker's favor. And in a year or two, e-cigs will probably be banned for the aforementioned billions of reasons. Almost 500,000 people die every year in the U.S. from smoking cigarettes. Too bad for them. This is just another case of profits over people. But I still exhort everyone who smokes cigarettes to try an e-cigarette. I think they'll find that it is possible to quit smoking without going nuts. And later they might want to pick up some extra batteries and empty cartridges. Anyone can easily obtain everything needed to make their own e-liquid. So when e-cigs are banned, well, as Frank from Siggy's, he says, happy vaping. Regards, Bob. P.S. There are many more aspects of the story I couldn't fit in here, but if you click on over to superbeans.com/quitting, there's a lot of information. superbeans.com/quitting. This really, from Bob Alexander, this is really fascinating stuff. I wish this would have been available to me a long time ago. Like I said, I'm in that 7% who on the 50th, or was it 60th, attempt to stop smoking was able to do it with Nicorette gum and patches. So if you are a cigarette smoker, just do it, just for the sheer hell of it. Nobody's going to know if you check out what he's got on his website, superbeans.com/quitting. No one will ever know. This is Bob providing a, if not a public service, an effort to enlighten. I have a couple of old magazine ads that I framed that I have on the wall in the studio. One of them is Ronald Reagan. It's from Christmas 1949 or something. It's a magazine ad, and he has got a carton of Chesterfield cigarettes in his hand and one in his mouth. Or no, a carton under his arm and one in his hand. And he's talking about how he's giving Chesterfield cigarettes to all of his good friends. And there's another one from, I guess, from 43 or 44, another magazine ad. A soldier, an army dude with a cigarette in his mouth, and he's exhorting the people reading the ad to remember the boys overseas and send them a carton or two or six or, you know, whatever you can remember to send to the boys overseas, whatever. So check it out, just for the hell of it, just for the hell of it, check it out. At the bottom of the next hour, we are going to do ta-da! Podcast trivia, where you can win a one-year subscription to downloads of The Molloy Show. Kathy and I were talking today. It's been 4 or 5 weeks since we've done this, because it's been 4 or 5 Fridays in a row, hasn't it, that we have not been? How many? Three? It's been three that we've not been here. So, bottom of the next hour, podcast trivia. And the questions this week were submitted, and we thank Tara. Tara sent these to us of RepublicanDirtyTricks.com. Check. Oh, she didn't know. Not the questions. I'm sorry. She provided the free subscriptions. Tara did, right? Tonight's session of podcast political trivia is sponsored by Tara of RepublicanDirtyTricks.com. So check out our site, and thanks, Tara, for donating this and other podcast subscriptions for our contest. And if you'd like to donate a podcast for the contest, go to MikeMolloy.com. It supports the show, and it gives a needy truth seeker access to the premium content. So thank you. Thanks again to Tara of RepublicanDirtyTricks.com. Check out her site. Another email. This is from Juan Guerra. Mike, I was born here. The subject line says, I'm dark and scared. Mike, I was born here. My father came from Mexico in 56. I am dark, and my 21-year-old son is even darker. I have no accent. I guess I will be a target. Some want an identity card. The Germans had identity symbols. Will I have to wear an M within a circle? Juan Guerra. That's how it starts, Juan. That's how it starts, right? Man. Jerry in Minneapolis writes, subject line, so it begins. Down in Arizona, one has to carry papers proving that one was born here or legally here. I wonder how long it will take for the Nazification of the rest of the nation. Jerry in Minneapolis. This is from Willard, who writes, Michael, what you are saying now is crazy. The Constitution has nothing at all to do with foreign citizenry, but it has to do with domestics of their constitutionalisms. Foreigners in and the Cray Bible is not relevant to this. I'm sorry. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Let me add just a postscript.
End your day screaming with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Now, according to McClatchy newspapers, Kevin Hall and Chris Adams, who got this up on the website today, investors trusted these ratings services to give them guides to the quality of financial products like bonds. But many of the bonds rated as top quality turned out to be junk. The fallout from that was a housing collapse that triggered a global financial crisis. And these dumb, half-witted, teabag Republicans say, well, it was Acorn. They did it. In one example obtained by the committee, Yvonne Fu, a Moody's employee, sent an email to a banker at Merrill Lynch in June 2007, pressuring Merrill Lynch to lock down a big fee in exchange for a positive rating from Moody's. Ms. Fu wrote, quote, we have spent significant amount of resource on this deal, and it will be difficult for us to continue with this process if we do not have an agreement on the fee issue, end quote. Merrill Lynch acquiesced, but not without conditions. The Merrill Lynch employee said, quote, we're okay with the revised fee schedule for this transaction. We're agreeing to this under the assumption that this will not be a precedent for any future deals and that you will work with us further on this transaction to try to get to some middle ground with respect to the ratings. You see what's going on? And a lot of this is going to be released tomorrow, you know, a Friday document dump. that nobody cares about. No, you know, why doesn't Carl Levin wait till Monday and do the document dump? But all this is going to come out tomorrow. Emails back and forth between the ratings agencies that are supposed to be the consumer watchdog groups. Boy, is that a joke, huh? And the financial predators that the consumer watchdog groups were supposed to, well, be watchdogging. Emails back and forth. Well, okay, we'll give you a good rating, but, you know, agree to the fee. Well, we'll agree to the fee, but for God's sake, stop trying to gouge us. We're not trying to gouge you. Agree to the fee. All right, we'll give you the fee. Now, in light of that, Obama today said how his plan will protect Americans from future Wall Street abuses.
We need to give consumers more protection and more power in our financial system. This is not about stifling competition, stifling innovation. It's just the opposite. With a dedicated agency setting ground rules and looking out for ordinary people in our financial system, we will empower consumers with clear and concise information when they're making financial decisions. So instead of competing to offer confusing products, companies will compete the old-fashioned way by offering better products.
Oh, please.
And that will mean more choices for consumers, more opportunities for businesses, and more stability in our financial system.
Here it comes.
And unless your business model depends on bilking people, there's little to fear from these new rules.
Did you hear that? Huh?
So,
did you hear that? And unless your business model depends on bilking people, there's little to fear from these new rules. The entire business model of Wall Street was based on bilking people. Didn't we just have all over the newspapers about the guy who made $2 billion because Goldman Sachs set up something designed to fail, and they made money, and he made money, and the investors got screwed and raped and beaten into a bloody pulp. And today, Obama says, unless your business model depends on bilking people, there's little to fear from these new rules. Mr. President, you're a very smart man. You really are. Where in the hell have you been the past 2 weeks? Your own SEC. Oh, never mind. Never mind. Unless your business model depends on bilking people, Mr. President, the entire setup. I'm just a high school graduate that has a 25-cent radio program, and I read Krugman and Bruce Enberg and a few other people, and even I can put one and one together and come up with two. What do you mean, unless your business model depends on bilking people? The whole damn thing was set up on bilking people. Or is that not true? Was it all Acorn and all those rat bastards who had no doc loans and oh, it was their fault? I mean, the entire world economy slammed up against a brick wall, and it was a bunch of dark-skinned people in Philadelphia who engineered it all? Because they insisted that poor people should have loans, too, 30 years ago? OMFG. 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 More when we come back.
Hey, truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
You know, how often have you heard these right-wing punks and thugs talking about, well, if we have welfare in this country, it's a redistribution of wealth. Why should I have to take my hard-earned tax dollars and give them to somebody who doesn't want to work? That's redistribution of wealth. Have you ever seen, and I'm addressing people out there who still have shreds of brain material left to think with, have you ever seen a more blatant and complete redistribution of wealth than what we've seen here in the past 2 years in this country? And it's all gone up. They set up schemes and scams to rip off everything they can rip off. And then when all of a sudden the ripoff itself starts to come to pieces because they sucked too much, then they demand the people whose pensions they ruined, whose savings they ruined, whose house value they ruined, they demand of those people to bail them out. And what does Bush and Obama do? Bail them out. So that 8 months later, these predatory bastards are posting profits in the billions again in one quarter, first quarter. How does that sit with people who are living now with a relative because they lost their house, or they're living in a car because they lost their apartment because they couldn't find a job, because the entire economy has been beat into a bloody mass by the same people who did the beating 80 years ago? Same people with the same goal. To continue to suck everything. They want everything. Last year, McClatchy Newspaper's investigation revealed how top management at Moody's rating service pressured analysts to find ways to get deals done to prevent the business from going to a competitor. Top management at Moody's told their cubicle rats, come up with some numbers to show that these companies are not screwing everybody blind. Because if you don't, they'll go somewhere else and get the numbers. And we lose millions. Get your bony ass to work. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Practice wasn't exclusive to Moody's. Another email to be unveiled at Friday's hearing features a Standard & Poor's employee angrily complaining to a Morgan Stanley banker about ratings agencies being played off of each other. Eh? The email says, quote, how many millions does Morgan Stanley pay us in the greater scheme of things? Good word there. How many times have I accommodated you on tight deals? And tomorrow's hearings will feature current and former executives from both major ratings agencies who worked on the complex deals called collateralized debt obligation CDOs. CDOs involve giant pools of U.S. mortgages packaged together for sale to investors as a complex security with high stakes and high reward. And guess what happened? Guess what happened? But Mr. President explains here how the Wall Street pirates, bastards, thieves, over the past 5 years made incredible profits on the backs of average Americans. That's you and me. Americans who lost their jobs, lost their pensions, lost their homes, while these bastards rewarded themselves with billion-dollar bonuses.
A free market was never meant to be a free license to take whatever you can get, however you can get it.
Really?
That's what happened too often in the years leading up to this crisis. Some, and let me be clear, not all, but some on Wall Street forgot that behind every dollar traded or leveraged, There's a family looking to buy a house or pay for an education, open a business, save for retirement. What happens on Wall Street has real consequences across the country, across our economy. I've also spoken before about the need to build a new foundation for economic growth in the 21st century. And given the importance of the financial sector, Wall Street reform is an absolutely essential part of that foundation. Without it, our house will continue to sit on shifting sands, and our families, businesses, and the global economy will be vulnerable to future crises. That's why I feel so strongly that we need to enact a set of updated, common sense rules to ensure accountability on Wall Street and to protect consumers in our financial system.
You see, in my opinion, of course, what do I know? Not much. In my opinion, the talk that Mr. Obama gave today at Cooper Union in New York City in front of this room full of assorted bandits, liars, thugs, thieves, fraudmeisters, absolute SOBs who couldn't care less about screwing up some family's education fund in Wichita or some family's house equity in Tampa. No, they don't care. I mean, come on. I live in New York City. I'm a bankster. I made, you know what my bonus was last year? $1.3 billion. So Obama is up there talking to them like, I don't know, like what? Like a Sunday school teacher trying to give a bunch of incipient sinners a lesson in the good book. Now, you shouldn't be doing this. Now, this is not the way it works. Now, people will get hurt if you continue to do this. We've got to have some change here in your behavior. You know what I think Obama should have done today? I would have loved to have heard his speech as a preamble, just a preamble. If he would have taken that 20 or 30 minutes, however long he talked, and at the very end said, okay, now I understand something very clearly, and everybody in this room understands the same thing. You people are liars. You're sneaks, you're cheats, you're defrauders. Every one of you has a surprise waiting when you walk out of this building today. Out in front, while you've been in here listening to me scold your little rancid asses, we have been bringing around to the front door and the back door, don't get any ideas, paddy wagons, big ones, with multiple seating. You, sons of bitches, are going to prison. Every single one of you. You're being arrested and charged with the biggest fraud ever perpetrated against the human race. You make your bond and you can get out. Your bond's already been set. You don't even know it. It's $500 million for every one of you thugs. Chump change, right, Mr. Blankfine? So my little talk is over. Thanks for your attention. You want to applaud again the way you applauded during my talk when I'm standing up here? I'm trying to walk a very fine line. I know you people put me in office. I know you did that. But I still have a bit of a moral sense left, a little tiny bit of responsibility. I don't have any courage. If I had any courage, after you all were locked up, I would use the power of the federal government to blow this whole banking system completely to hell and replace it with something called the Bank of America or the Bank of the United States. And it would serve one purpose: to help finance real things, real jobs, real home building, real college educations, real pension funds, and nobody would screw with it. So, my talk is over. Don't be alarmed by all these federal marshals you see walking into the room. What they are carrying in their hands are arrest warrants. Thank you. God bless you, and God bless the United States of America. And then, do you have any music? Then some music would play, and the flags would unfurl. Well, that's hard on the ears, that was. This is the Banker's Anthem. Again, everybody would stand up, the curtain would pull back, and there would be a band. And this is what they would play.
Another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. Like I said at the beginning of this tirade, you know, I hate to be the skunk at the picnic. I'm supposed to be, you know, progressive and liberal, which I'm not. I am a democratic socialist. Okay. Social democrat. And I know that Obama, in the context of where we are in the history of this economy, this country right now, Obama is probably doing all that he can. I mean, sure, it's my fantasy to see marshals walk in with arrest warrants, but, you know, there's no president going to do that, you know. Now, of course, if this were China, they would walk in with machine guns and say to everybody, okay, when the dear leader is finished talking, you will all stand up and walk out into the back courtyard. And there would be no bail or no arrest. There would be the sound of gunfire. That's, you know, what they do in a society where they say, here are the rules. Make as much money as you want. If you cheat or steal or lie, we will kill you. Very simple. Now, you can cheat, lie, and steal outside of our country, but if you cheat, lie, and steal inside, we'll kill you. How simple is that? You know, so go play nice, check your rule book, and if you cheat, we kill you. From Prairie 2. It does appear that the Democrats are filling this bill, the Senate bill, with loopholes big enough to fly an executive jet through. So this appears to be just another exercise to make the Republicans look bad before the election. We do need to remember that the Republicans would do absolutely nothing, or worse, they would do something, if the framework exists to do something about these banks, then the loopholes could be easily closed once the next crisis appears, and it will soon enough. Reining in the banks at this point isn't going to stop it. They've already done the damage. Okay, well, this is, and I certainly hear that, and I understand that point of view. This is the same thing that was said about this lukewarm, watery, so-called health care insurance reform act that was passed. Same thing. Well, it's a first step. And now we're going to do wondrous things now that we have the first step. Excuse me for being a cynical radio talk show host, but See, my feeling is, you know, my feeling is the system has been so corrupted. The last person who really had a chance to fix things and do it in a way that would remain fixed was, of course, FDR. But in the 70-some years since, or 80, well, how long has it been? Since then, there has been the rise of the American fascist class and the corporatist class. Jefferson warned against it. Lincoln warned against it. Eisenhower warned against it. But it's here. So this is probably all that Barack Obama or Abe Snake or anybody who becomes president of the United States could ever, under any circumstances, possibly do. You know my feeling, though. Blow it up, figuratively speaking. With all the teabag nutballs out there, somebody will take that literally. Blow it up. Just say, look, the experiment has failed. Take a look. Take a look. It's failed, this experiment in predatory capitalism. So now let's evolve. Let's move to the next level up, not down, because the direction we're going is right back to serfdom. Been there, done that. Got the ragged, dirt-encrusted T-shirt. So let's not go backwards. Let's go up. Let's advance. Let's do maybe what every single philosopher has always maintained from the very beginning of philosophy, whether they were religious philosophers or secular, whatever, simply to share and share alike, be nice to people, do unto others, yada, 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 yada. And that means changing the system, changing it dramatically, essentially, and fundamentally. Banking should no longer be, it never should have been, but banking should no longer be the playground, the sandbox of these predatory vampires who don't care how many lives they destroy. As a matter of fact, I sometimes think they keep track. Somehow, some way, they figured out a way to keep track of how many lives, how many families they have destroyed with their manipulative games. And then the poor teabag crowd, right? How about those pigeons? How about those little monkeys climbing around, chattering? Their heads bobbing up and down with their misspelled signs. Keep your government hands off my Medicare. You know, stuff like that. Barack Obama's not from here. He's not American. I don't do blah, 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 blah. My God. Well, I'm not the president, I'm not the leader, I'm not this, I'm not that. But, you know, if I could be king of America for a day, I certainly would do that. I'd put everybody to sleep. You know, what's that series that is out now, Flash Forward? We haven't seen it, but I've seen, seen the promos during the day. Flash Forward. Excuse me, I'm still coughing. But I would do that. Put everybody to sleep, and while everybody's asleep for about 30 minutes, completely change the system. Socialize those five industries I talked about. And everybody wake up, and they say, oh, gosh, were we asleep? And then everybody would look around and say, well, hey, I've got a job. Hey, I've got a house. Hey, my kids are going to college. Hey, I've got 2 weeks off this summer. Hey, I get family leave. Hey, I get... Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. 7 past the hour. We'd like to hear from you now. The number is 877-996-2556. If you have any comments about what you heard today, if you paid any attention. I know it's difficult to when these speeches are given at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, high noon, whatever. But if you have a comment, we'd like to hear from you. 877-996-2556. Wellpoint, this story popped out tonight. Wellpoint Incorporated, the world's, it's the largest health plan company in the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association. According to Wikipedia, Wellpoint is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association and serves its members as the Blue Cross licensee for California, Colorado, Connecticut, Georgia, Indiana, Kentucky, Maine, Missouri, 30 counties, the Kansas City area, Nevada, New Hampshire, New York, blah, 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 Ohio, Virginia, Wisconsin. In addition to Blue Cross, the company also operates under the Anthem name. Wellpoint spent more than $2.4 million on lobbying last year, according to the Nonpartisan Center for Responsive Politics. In July 2008, Wellpoint subsidiary Anthem Blue Cross agreed to a settlement with the California Department of Managed Health Care. Wellpoint paid $10 million and reinstated 1,770 policyholders whose plans they had canceled. Yada, 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 yada. It just goes on and on. If there is a more criminal enterprise than Wellpoint, Inc., I'd like to know who it is. I'd like to know what it is. This is a criminal enterprise of massive proportions. Massive. Today, it turns out, as an investigation by the Reuters news agency, Wellpoint targeted key groups of insured. Their first experiment appears to be women diagnosed with breast cancer. These are people who were became the victims of rescission in addition to being the victims of their illness. Rescission being the Wellpoint said goodbye once they found out that the women had breast cancer. Reuters says the women all paid their insurance premiums on time. Before they fell ill, none had any problems with their insurance. Initially, they believed their policies had been canceled by mistake. They had no idea that Wellpoint was using a computer algorithm that automatically targeted them and every other policyholder recently diagnosed with breast cancer. The software triggered an immediate fraud investigation as the company searched for some pretext to drop their policies. Once the women were singled out, Wellpoint then canceled their policies based on either erroneous or flimsy information. I mean, how do you get your mind around this? The audits, the computer algorithm that looked at these cases, in a manner of speaking, they were intended to build a database of people they could target for fraud or misrepresentation if they should be diagnosed with anything. Acne, hives, breast cancer. Now, the health insurance reform, as far as I understand this, does nothing. Nothing to punish these unconscionable bastards for doing this. Nothing. There's nothing. Wellpoint claims that these women had made material misrepresentations in order to justify dropping them. Wellpoint dropped these women. Material misrepresentations could be not having told Wellpoint that they had acne, cystic acne or something, when they were 14. This is a huge, huge story. And does anybody have an idea to what degree the health insurance reform that was recently passed will punish these unconscionable bastards, will dissolve their company, will send their executives to prison? How many people did this capitalist pig organization murder? How many women who were diagnosed with breast cancer that could have been stopped? Breast cancer is not a death sentence. If you get treatment, if you get the proper drugs. So how many women were murdered by WellPoint? How many children were made motherless by these predatory bastards? Huh? Got any idea? I don't. I'll bet it was a bunch. Disgusting. So what's the answer to this with the Obama administration and the Democrats? Of course, the Republicans, with their teabaggers running around bumping into things, eating their own livers while they hold up their racist Nazi signs. They don't care. But the Democrats and the Obama administration, what was their answer to this kind of fraud? Well, okay, here's what we're going to do. There's only one answer to this kind of fraud, and it's ongoing, it's permanent, it's part of predatory capitalism. You talk about disaster capitalism. A family hits a disaster like this at the same time they found out that their 401k is worthless and the value of their house is plummeting. Huh? You're an American. You exist inside that free enterprise system in the good old US of A. And man, the banksters hand you your ass, and the medical industrial complex hands you your liver and your heart. And there's nothing left. And what did you do wrong, Sparky? What did you do? You paid your bills. You bought your house. You went to work. And yet, running around the countryside out here are teabagger freaks, led by the suicide-prone freak Glenn Beck, trying to convince everybody that, well, you see in this painting over here at Rockefeller Center, this is Karl Marx. And over here, well, this is John Kennedy. Or some such madness. So the answer to WellPoint, it was very simple. Very simple. President Obama comes out and says, okay, in 90 days, the health insurance predatory rat bastards that have been screwing people left and right all comes to an end, and we're going to have single-payer health insurance like most civilized countries. And God bless you, and may God bless America. Goodbye. I have to go to lunch. Man. So, WellPoint, it now turns out, targeted women with breast cancer and canceled their policies and then accused them of fraud or misrepresentation or filling out the form improperly, the application for insurance, because they had developed breast cancer. And God forbid that an insurance company would pay for the treatment of breast cancer. That's not why they're in business. They're not in business to pay back premiums when somebody gets sick. They're in business to take everything they can take from you, every single thing they can take from you, to suck you and bleed you dry and then kick you to the curb. Kind of like the financial services industry.
make nice. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Steve in Seattle has an idea for bank reform. Two steps to disable the mechanisms that enabled our most recent financial crisis. One, separate banks from investment services. And two, require any bank that makes a loan to own that loan to its conclusion until it's paid off, forgiven, or defaults. I know why they're making it hard. Reform of financial laws won't allow banking charlatans to line their pockets, they being Congress. But let's be clear. It's not hard, actually. It's not complex. It's not complicated. Well, that's a good idea, Steve, if you want to continue working within a capitalist system, which I've had enough of. But that's a good idea. I don't even want to get in. I've got some stuff here about all the lies that the Republicans are telling about this bill that the Senate is going to bring up for debate, I guess. You know, it's the same stuff. We've heard it so many times. Oh, my God. You know, Republicans have turned in. They really have. They haven't turned into. They've been replaced by android beings. Have you heard anything out of the mouth of Boehner or McConnell or Kyle or any of these Republicans, anything that's any different this month from last month, from 6 months ago, from 8 months ago? They stand there. They have their little press briefings. They stand in some little cloakroom with the podium, and they make these pronouncements about, this is just going to, and besides that, and, you know, we've been saying, and, well, we don't think the president wants to reach across the aisle. Well, he's never tried to work in a bipartisan. Well, you know, I don't dare bomb or blah, 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 blah. And after a while, it just turns into like gibberish from way, like something you pick up on a SETI transmission, you know, and you're listening, you go, wait, what was that? Listen, repeating noises. That must mean there's civilization out there. Listen. We don't believe he's really working across the aisle. What was that? We don't believe he's really reaching across the aisle. We don't believe he's really reaching across the aisle. We don't really believe he's reaching across the aisle. Oh, no, that's not extraterrestrial intelligence. That's just those Republicans again. Never mind. Turn the dishes back on. Insane. Steve is in Austin, Texas, listening to XM. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Mike. How you doing tonight?
All right. How are you?
Oh, we're getting by. Interesting. I was calling about the predatory financial people, but predatory insurance people are, there's not a great distinction to be made between the two.
Man, can you believe it? You talk about, I mean, we knew it was getting bad with the people that control the money. But this bad? I mean, when you look at WellPoint and Goldman Sachs, this is beyond belief. You'd have to be a fiction writer to come up with this stuff.
Right, right. These ladies that these folks that that have WellPoint insurance purposely misled WellPoint in the beginning because they knew 10, 15, 20 years down the road that they were going to get breast cancer. So I better lie to them now.
That's right. That's right. So let me hide the fact that I had cystic acne because I'm also going to get breast cancer. And you're right. That, it's a plot. It was fraud on the part of the insured. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Just like all the subprime lenders or the subprime borrowers were getting over on the financial.
That's right. So, they were all sympathizers or members of Acorn, and they set out deliberately to sabotage this wonderful financial services industry.
To bring down the mortgage loan industry,
And do you know the hell of it is, Steve, do you know how many people believe both those scenarios? And they all have tea bags dripping from their heads.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, what can we expect to hear about self-policing and self-correcting markets again from the likes of people like S&P and Moody's?
Yeah, right.
Please.
Right.
Please. God, help us. Well,
the Adam Smith's invisible hand of the marketplace that will make sure that the fraudsters disappear, because, you know, capitalism and investors and P&L statements and so on and so forth, they won't tolerate the liars and the fraudsters, so they will be weeded out.
Because Adam Smith equals God, right? Blankfein told us he's doing God's work.
If it isn't Adam Smith, it's Ayn Rand. It's or both of them. Maybe she's the Messiah. Hey, I got to leave there. Thanks, Steve.
You bet.
Take care. Stay with us. If you want to talk, 877-996-2556.
The Flying Monkey Right. It's Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. Angie Holin and Lewis Jacobson, writing for the St. Pete Times political fact fiction blog, which, by the way, is a 2009 Pulitzer Prize winner. They put this out yesterday. It's not every day that we find the leaders of both parties in the Senate staking out opposite stances on an issue, yet both ending up largely incorrect. But that's the case with two items we checked concerning financial services regulation. The statements by Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, both consider whether a bill now under consideration would encourage or stop bailouts of failing financial services firms. The debate is critical because voters hate bailouts. In fact, Republican pollster Frank Luntz advised opponents of regulations that, quote, the single best way to kill any legislation is to link it to the big bank bailout, end quote. Reid, a supporter of the measure, says flatly that the bill will end taxpayer bailouts. McConnell said that the bill, quote, actually guarantees future bailouts of Wall Street banks, end quote, and said that it would be done at taxpayer expense. Well, here's the truth. The bill intends to liquidate failing companies rather than bail them out, and it would do so by establishing a pot of money made up of contributions from the financial industry itself. So McConnell's argument that the bill guarantees future bailouts doesn't hold water. It's a lie. Reid's claim that the bill will end bailouts is also problematic. While the bill does, in fact, do many things that experts believe will reduce the likelihood of future bailouts, it does not specifically ban them in the future. And sources familiar with the industry told us that the amount envisioned for the fund, $50 billion, may be too small to preclude future taxpayer bailouts if lawmakers and presidents are faced with a serious financial crisis. So we rated Reid's statement barely true. Now, what I found interesting about this is the attempt to establish equivalency, even though I certainly respect people who write for the St. Pete Times. But the attempt, and it's always there, by what's left of honest media, and very little, I consider the writers of the St. Pete Times to be among that group, but the attempt to, follow that journalistic tradition, if not direct order, never take a side, always give equivalence to both sides of an argument. And when you have one group howling obscenities, lies, and nonsense into the night, and the other group stating fact, or stating fact based on the hope that future legislative bodies will make sure that what they're stating as fact becomes fact, and try to draw equivalence between those two, you're perpetuating the problem. You're not solving it. So Mitch McConnell is a liar, always has been, always will be. Harry Reid is a weakling, always has been, always will be, but he's not an unreconstructed liar. And there is no equivalence between the two. Unless you want to get into the metaphysical about both of them are trying to ride an invisible horse into a dark night of phantoms. I don't know where I was going with that. It really doesn't matter. It wound up no place, so screw it. Back to your phone calls. That's always safe, right? John is in L.A. listening on KTLK. Hello, John.
Hey. I'm not sure where I'm going to go either, but...
Okay.
I'm not sure if it matters, but regarding these banks and financial problems, a long time ago, before 9/11 occurred, there was a family reunion, and a cousin of mine's a vice president at J.P. Morgan Chase.
A family member?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And she said some things that, you know, I just added. I already, you know, heard Jim Baker talk about the election. I mean, voting in 2000. So I was already pissed. But, she mentioned that she was going to start going to work for a new unit.
Right.
J.P. Morgan Chase was putting together to purchase distressed financial assets. And when I sort of tried to clarify with her what that meant, I said sort of like a salvage operation. And she agreed. She said yes. So when I think back to that, all I can think of, like, they saw this coming. They all worked together, not just Goldman Sachs, but they saw it coming. They put it together. They had a lot to gain from it. So
you had a peek into what became a peek into the future of what became this enormous financial collapse. Correct?
Yeah. Seems to be. Seems like it.
All right. Listen, I won't say anything.
And yeah. I'm breaking a code of omerta.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking the same thing.
But you know what? I give a damn more about the... I'm sorry for using that word.
Yeah.
But I give a darn about the country and everybody else in here than my family.
I hear you, John. But I was thinking, this program is monitored by the NSA. You might get a subpoena now to go testify before Congress about what this family associate might have had in mind. Oh, and just a little hint, all right, just for me.
Hey, we were drinking champagne at the time.
So it didn't count.
Yeah, it
didn't count. One last thing. I am Italian. It's omerta.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry. That's all right. The accent is on the last syllable.
Okay.
All right?
Well, I ain't.
I know. That's all right. Thanks, John. I appreciate you checking in.
Yeah.
Oh, I've been wanting to do that. I always mispronounce words, and I always get like 15 emails right away, and which I appreciate. Don't get me wrong. You know, there's nothing worse than somebody walks around mispronouncing words on a radio show. But John said omerta. Omerta. Eddie is in Detroit listening to XM. Hello, Eddie.
Mike.
Eddie.
Don't you think that anger and ignorance go hand in hand?
No. I think deep intelligence and anger go hand in hand. Well, are you a person who never gets angry?
No, I'm not angry at all because I think I understand the causal mechanisms for
the what?
Some of our recent problems.
No, wait. The what?
The causal mechanisms.
Causal mechanisms. You're getting too deep for me. What's a causal mechanism?
Well, for one thing, the free market, what little was left of it in the financial world, did work. And what I mean
the free market, what was left of it, what do you mean?
Well, the banking prior to the collapse in 2008, 2009 was one of the most regulated industries in America.
2008, 2009, most regulated. Eddie, you've been smoking that wacky weed again, haven't you? Eddie, do me a favor. Go away. You don't know what you're talking about. You belong on Glenn Beck's radio show or Sean Hannity's. Okay? So, you know, I've had enough intense emotion tonight. I don't want to unload on your ass. So I just politely tell you to scram, all right? You don't know what you're talking about. You really don't. I can imagine you were about to tell me that Acorn did it! 2008, 2009. Oh, that's right. 2009 is the Obama year. That's right. It's Obama's fault. Yeah. Yeah, that's when all this happened. Yep. It all happened in 2008, right there at the very end, as our Supreme Leader George Bush was leaving office. And then in 2009. Yeah, okay. All right. Goodbye, Eddie. Have a good time. Listen, do something about bringing the jobs back to Detroit. A, B, don't call again, because I just can't handle that kind of gross stupidity and ignorance. I really can't. So, take care, Eddie. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Before the hour, quick email here from Prairie 2 regarding Adam Smith that we kind of danced around a little bit tonight. Prairie 2 writes, the neocons misquote Adam Smith to their own ends. He only used the metaphor invisible hand once to describe the advantages to what we would call today buy local. The invisible hand, so-called, was the advantages the community enjoyed from the locals all engaging in business. His description of foreign trade is deliberately misread, where it describes big business getting rich by going into undeveloped countries and hiring cheap labor. His comparison of buy local and unrestricted imports was obvious to the readers of his time as good versus evil. And Ayn Rand doesn't need to be misquoted by the neocons. She was insane. Well, thank you. See, between Krugman and Prairie 2, I get all the stuff I need about economics, right? Lloyd is calling from Long Beach.
Yeah, hi, Mike.
California. Hey, Lloyd.
Hey, you know when President Cheney had his meeting with the energy guys right at the beginning of their stolen presidency, you know, with the judicial coup d'etat that happened in this country in 2000. Well, they've never released those papers.
Right.
And then they set up Enron, which was economic warfare against the western states in California. Now, the rest of the country didn't care about that because they sort of write California off and the western states. But now it's come around to everybody. I mean, you know, that bell curve that's housing is worth less than it was 10 years ago when it should have doubled. In a normal economy, it would have doubled. Everybody has been totally ripped off, and the only card they got to play is the race card to keep us divided. And we can get through this mess as a country if we don't let them divide us by race. If they divide us by race, then this country's through. If no one goes for that okey-doke, that stupidity, that spiritual sickness, then we'll get through it. But if we go through for the spiritual sickness of the racism, just kiss it goodbye, because the bankers, they don't care. All they care about is the money.
Right.
And they declared economic warfare against this country. And I don't understand why nationalizing the Federal Reserve isn't on the table in this quote-unquote economic reform, because the Federal Reserve makes the calls on where the economy goes.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they said it is, if you can control banking policy, you don't need to run the country because you already run it. And with the American people not in position to control economic policy, for instance, let's take the ripoff of rent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, everybody pays rent, but nobody gets an 80% renter's equity credit for paying somebody else's mortgage
right.
on whatever they're renting.
Right.
So if you want real economic justice in this country or any country in the world, then give everybody an 80% renter's equity credit. 10 years they have a down payment. And another 20 years, they own what they want and what they're living in and what they're able to take care of themselves.
Well,
as opposed to absentee landlords, which just exploit people and everybody else to give themselves a comfortable life, but everybody else is miserable.
But I'm sure you understand, because I agree with everything you're saying, but I'm sure you understand, Lloyd, what has happened here. We now live in a huge pen, like cattle in a feedlot, and we are fed certain stuff to make us forget the fact we're about to be slaughtered. We are in a holding pen, like cattle in a feedlot, and cattle in a feedlot may have dreams about running across the prairie free and, you know, having sex with the cows and so on and so forth, but they're never going to go anywhere. They're going to stay in the feedlot until their heads are lopped off and they're turned into a hamburger. And I get the feeling sometimes that there are certain industries in this country, weapons industry, financial services industry, health insurance industry, who look at us the same way. You know, they've got a captive audience of 320 million that they can manipulate, push around, do this to. Some of them will be allowed to make some money. Some of them will be allowed to really rise into the top 1%. But the vast majority, say, oh, I don't know, 98.9% will stay in the feedlot. And they will stay there until they die. And, you know, this idea of economic justice or, you know, all these radical ideas have been out there since the 20s and 30s, even before that. But I'm talking about modern times. All those ideas that the banksters and the corporatists and the predatory capitalists, they look at that and they go, yeah, okay. Yeah, you work on that, okay? How's that Hopi Changey thing coming for you? Huh? How's that working out? I get your point, Lloyd. Thanks a lot, man. Stay in touch, all right? We're out of time. Gordon in Oklahoma City writes, Mike, did it ever occur to the right-wingers and Republican cultists, I repeat myself, that the very same people they are accepting advice from are those that brought us this financial mess? Of course not. Gordon. See you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.